Well, hello there to all our steamers listeners. Welcome to another episode of podcast alongside my mate Mick Rains. How you going, Mick?
Yeah, good, mate.
Well, today's guest is a little bit different than normal, but this is a guy that's got probably a bit of a name in the old Southern England comp. What do you think there, Mick?
Yeah, very, very well known, very well respected.
This guy's an opposition player, a former Waratahs player, former referee in the comp, and now doing junior coaching with some of the local talent up in Wagga. And he's going to tell us a story about the times that he used to play against the Steamers and ref the Steamers and probably sent Mick Rains out of the ground for him. But anyway.
Didn't send me out. We'll get to that.
No further introduction to welcome Sam Donlan. How you going?
Hey, Housie. Thanks, mate. Doing well. How you doing, Mick?
Yeah, good, mate. We'll drive straight into it. How much do you regret not playing for the Steamers?
Not one bit.
End of recording. Stop now.
I always love playing against the Steamers.
So just, you played for the Waratahs.
I did.
So when did you play? So you've got it. You're a player and a referee over a pretty long time.
Correct.
What's your playing career? When was that? What period was that?
Late 90s, early to mid-2000s. Back when, sort of towards the end of the Riverina rugby days and into Southern England.
Right, so in the mid-2000s. Yep. What position were you playing?
I was a second rower, a lightweight second rower.
All right. First grade, second grade? Bit of column
off,
A, bit column B.
A bit of column, mostly column A in terms of first grade, but started off in second grade.
Yeah.
And actually was sent to the judiciary in my very first game of rugby for Waratahs.
No,
yeah.
No. Yeah.
And what for?
It was Waratahs versus RAAC at RAAC, which were always intense battles back in the days.
So that's that border army. Oh, no, the army up there.
Yep, Riverina
Army. Kabuka, yep.
And back in the days when rucking was totally in the game.
Yeah. Legal.
Five players went to judiciary that day.
Yeah.
And, it was no one got any. There was no sanctions for anyone who went to the judiciary. Yeah. They were all thrown out. And Murray Wilkinson was a referee.
How do you rate Murray as a referee?
Yeah, he was handy. I'll never let him forget that day because I reckon he got those calls wrong.
Oh,
I'll
really?
Every time.
Oh, I'm going to.
Well, they were touch judge calls, right? And if you know the touch judges who used to roll around back then, there were a couple that were known for throwing their hat in the ring.
Being pretty quick on the draw.
Yep.
Well, I rated Murray as a referee.
Yeah,
he's
I thought he was good.
He turned into a remarkably nice guy as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Compared to what he was on the field. Yeah. Yeah, they still have him in Tumut?
He was from Tumut into Wagga. He's been hanging around Wagga. I don't know where he's right now, if I'm honest, but he still goes to Waratahs home games. Same
okay.
A bit. Yeah,
yep.
He's a good guy.
All right.
Good rugby person.
So how old were you when you started playing? So end of high school sort of thing?
Yeah, I played a few games during high school. For the last couple of years of high school, I went to boarding school. And then so I played during school holidays.
Yeah.
But that was third grade or whatever was going around at the time. And I don't remember much about that. But my first season of senior footy was second grade with Waratahs in 99. And we played against you guys in the grand final that year.
In second grade. And
second grade.
I think we've had someone tell us how we went in that grade. What do you remember about that game?
A tough game. It was a bit of an up-and-down year. But the guys in the Waratahs team around that time were – there was a few, like, young up-and-comers who ended up hanging around the club for a while, and a few of those older guys on their way down, like Reece Grant and Mark Garraway and those sort of guys who were, again, good sort of club men that were hanging around.
Was this when the old Hannaford boys started to make their appearance?
There were definitely Hannafords. I reckon they were down here, though, around that time.
Yeah.
They've played for every club in rugby.
Well, we had a quick chat about that before. We think – Matt Hannaford's probably the most celebrated player in the competition.
He goes to every grand final.
Exactly. He's got a grand final rig every year.
He probably sits there and goes, he looks at the odds and goes, I reckon he's where I'm going to lay my hat this year.
Yeah. Well, I reckon three of the four Hannaford boys have played footy for Albury.
Yeah, well, Matt played in the 99 and 2000 grand finals.
Yeah.
So in first grade.
Scott and Andrew. Yeah.
Yeah, Scott would have, he might have played.
He played 12.
Did he, what about 13?
Yeah, he played a little bit of 13.
Yeah. So what do you remember about those games? So you beat us in the 1999 grand final.
Beat you the 99 grand final.
It must have been a sad day for you.
Terrible, yeah. Drank beer till it came out every orifice in your body. But tough footy, right? Like it was, yeah. It's always been one of those points that, you know, playing Albury, you knew you were going to have a game. It was, and, you know, if you're not...
And we were rucking, we're still rucking then too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There were jerseys getting ripped left, right and centre, but they were all cotton, so I'm sure they could be sewn back together or something, but, yeah.
Well, I think Belly's jumper up in the frame down there has got a big tear right across the chest.
Somebody must have stomped on him across the...
Yeah, someone stomped on him.
Well, even, like, lifting in lineouts was only just starting to become more consistent around that time. Yeah. Like, as juniors, we were, you know, coached on it around then. It was becoming more consistent. It's not the art that it is now.
Yeah.
But that was even, like, some teams wouldn't, you know, lift in lineouts around then too. Like,
It was
like a support hold. Eh? Remember back in the day?
Yeah,
it was the guy had to lift on the shorts. You could hold him.
You could hold him. Exactly. Yeah. They would come from a crouch and, some teams would have a jumper like 3 feet above the guy next to him and you'd sort of...
So, Sam, you born and raised in Wagga? You from Wagga?
I was, yeah. I went to Keringle High School and then went away to boarding school for the last couple of years. But, I've always sort of been around the area and, you know, my playing history was with Waratahs, obviously. I played a little bit in Canberra and then came back to Waratahs and then I started a gig as a development officer in 2003, around the year the Rugby World Cup was in Australia. So that was a bit of a boom time, I reckon, for rugby in the area. Yeah. But there was heaps of money flowing around.
Do you reckon the same thing will happen in 2027?
I hope so. Yeah. Let's tally the Lions tour into a World Cup and get some money in the bank.
Yep.
But so that was... I was development officer through that time, so a lot of the junior clubs in the area were kicking off around then too, like 2004, and that was the first year that Waratahs had 16s, and down this way, guys like Barry Dent, and Mick Redfern may not have been involved around then, but those guys...
I think it was Barry Dent and then Bruce Hazard.
The Orion thing too?
They were the people that were running it. I think
Don Cameron's young fella Angus was definitely around.
No, that's Angus Redfern. Times. That's
Angus Cameron, I reckon.
No, you're thinking of Alex
Cameron. Alex Cameron.
Alex Cameron, sorry.
So Julianne and Mick McLean were sort of as leaders in the club, but it was the juniors people themselves with Barry Dent and then Bruce Hazard, I think.
Yeah.
Dad play footy?
Dad played footy for Waratahs. My uncle played footy for Waratahs.
Are they in the book there?
Oh, there's... Well, my mum wrote it, so there's going to be some mention in there.
Sam's leading. I just tell you, he's propping up a Waratahs book here.
It's probably got everything about how good his uncle is, how good his dad is, and it come down to the nephew and the son, and
skip that bit.
Good to have family connections, right?
Yeah.
And so they all still Waratahs.
Family was originally from the Rock, so grew up on a sort of mixed farming enterprise out there, but eventually moved into town. I was only young when they moved into town, so I don't remember much time from the farm, but they've always been into sport and footy clubs, AFL out that way, but from a rugby sense, it was always Waratahs.
What do you remember from, say, you played here you played in this Riverina and Southern Inland for 5 or 6 years, 7 or 8 years?
Played a lot of juniors footy before that too. John Stewart and that were pivotal in, sort of keeping the junior stuff together, as was Chris Davison.
Yep.
Davo was a key element in terms of driving, junior footy. Colts footy, really, in that late 90s, early 2000s type era. And, there was a lot of talent come out of Albury through those groups as well.
Okay, what do you remember about coming to Albury, the trips down to Albury?
It's a fucking fortress. It was always a cold, wet day down at Murrayfield. I mean, the hospitality was always good. Like post game, everyone was always happy to have a beer and that sort of stuff, yeah, which is always a highlight.
Where were we then? It would have been the Star, maybe.
Oh, you've been at every pub in Albury,
yeah,
haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. You're not the first one to say everyone's seen that, just about.
Look, it was always...
We've got to share the love.
It was a tough day out. It was always going to be a tough day out when you played the Steamers down here. And the footy was always physical. So,
yeah,
you needed the beers after the game.
It always sounds like that, when you talk to a lot of people about those games,
they
see, the Waratah games and Steam games were physical back then.
You try and run it into someone like Belly, far out. Yeah. Like, he's made of concrete.
Yeah, well, we've heard a lot of that.
Did you ever come across some... Like when he was up in like Kuda in there?
Nah, that would have been, I reckon that would have been before my time.
Yeah.
But I've always known him to be associated with the Steamers.
Yeah.
If so that's your bus trips down. Do you remember any games? So you got your 99 grand final.
That was in Wagga.
Do you remember any event, you know, like clashes or
around bits and pieces, those 2000s, 2004, there were a couple of real physical games between Albury and Waratahs. And from memory, we beat you guys the first time we played you, which I think was in Wagga. And then the second time we played you down here, and we'd had a pretty successful year in 2004. You guys beat us down here, and it was only one or two losses for us in the season.
Yeah.
And that game was fisticuffs.
Yeah.
It was punch on.
It was full on.
And
yeah.
From memory, there was a broken cheekbone out of that.
Was that Stu Noel?
It's one of two that he's inflicted on Waratahs players, actually.
Do you think they had it coming?
Don't know. I wouldn't say.
That on behalf of the Steamers audience.
Well, look, the one from 2004 was, you know, was, I've never heard anything so sickening.
Yeah, really.
Two fellas just standing in front of each other, punching each other, and just that sound of like fist on face. The other one, I wasn't around for that, but that was the elbow to Dave Matthews.
Right, don't worry, Stu, you'll get a right of reply on all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got supporters in Wagga. Matt Hannaford loves him.
You find this a lot of the hardest players that have the most respect. You know, if after the game they can sort of go, oh, well, that was a good game, and have a beer and stuff, if they can move on.
I don't know whether that many fellas went to have beers with him after the game.
Maybe a year later or so.
I don't know. Some people like, it'd be like the guy that Richard Lowe knows, that Richard
Paul
Lowe.
Paul Carozza.
Bet you he won't want to sit down with a little Richard Lowe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Look, there's...
There's some people that still hold on to it, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's right. Look, there's... Yeah, every club's got their hard man, right? Like, and you know, there's
a long line of them sitting at Waratahs, right? Too.
It's a contact sport, and look, if you're not playing, you know, rugby to get over the person in front of you, what are you doing out there? You know, but there's a view that Stu took it a step too far.
This going,
that's not a view down here.
There is going too far.
So it's we've had a commentary that. The rugby's not as hard anymore, and the inference is that guys like Stu and the Megasons and, you know, the hard heads of the world no longer play rugby, and that sort of has softened us up a bit. But I tend to think it's the rules around the game have changed to the point that we can't be thugs.
Yeah, you know? I reckon it's just a cleaner game. The physicality is definitely, a lot different. Like, I know even, like, transitioning from, you know, playing to coaching to refereeing, like, even moving from there's a noticeable difference moving from a second-grade game to a first-grade game.
Mm. Yeah.
And in many ways it's an easier game to referee because the game, whilst it's quicker, it's a lot cleaner. The players are more accurate. They're fitter.
They know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So, but... In that, when they want to line someone up and the timing is right, like they can really do it too. So.
Well, if you talk to me in house, we would name probably half a dozen hits over we've seen probably over 10 or 15 years that we remember, you know, and they're just the big, the big hits, you know. Like that year you landed on Dave Armstrong and imprinted him into the ground at Connor Park. Was that it? Was he an Aggie or
a No, he was Waratahs. From Aggies to Waratahs. Which seems to be the common thing from a lot of those Aggie boys moving to Waratahs.
They tend to be wild out of Ag College and then
they come in and they adult, they have kids and whatever.
The girl's you can't keep carrying on like that. So they come over to Waratahs.
And they need the protection of the law or whatnot, so they get into the Waratahs.
You can see old Pat Barrett, is it?
You guys have got your own lawyers down here.
We'll ask Stu Nolan. He landed on them a couple of times.
But have you heard, you haven't heard the yarn about that punch on? The yarn goes that the steamers requested an extension of time to review facts or get some video footage or witness statements or whatever, and Southern Inland or Riverina Rugby, whatever it was at the time, agreed to give them the extension of time, and then the lawyers got involved because the zone had operated outside of the bylaws at the time. So Albury requested the extension of time, which was granted, and then they said you haven't operated within the bylaws, so a submission wasn't put in within the time frame, and so that the case was thrown out.
Perfect. That sounds like a perfect situation to me. The
So Riverina, Southern Inland, when did that all change over to that?
From my memory, it was 1999, 2000. I think 1999 was the last year of Riverina Rugby, and either 2000 or 2001, might have been 2001.
Why the change? Year of, do you know?
From my memory, it was the southwest clubs of, you know, West Wyalong and Grenfell and Cooter and Young were looking to come in. There was a bit of discontent with New South Wales rugby at the time, and they'd come over. The Brumbies were, you know,
hunting outside of their area, and
took them in under the.
Switched from the Waratahs to the Brumbies. Is that the
Riverina? It might have been Riverina first and then Southwest.
Yeah.
Came under the Brumbies, you know, admin umbrella. In the early days, from my memory, you could play both streams. Like you could still play, like in the, 2001 era, like we were still playing. I think Wagga even hosted the,
Country championships
in the, you know, sort of under,
which is a different stream to playing Brumbies Provincial.
Well, those pathways didn't exist back then.
Yeah.
But they were supported by the Brumbies around that time.
Oh, okay. And Mick McTaggart was still the brains behind the outfit?
Yep. Mick was has been a long-suffering volunteer of rugby in Riverina.
He was a great servant of the game. So he was... up until 2011, maybe 12.
Not sure when he got out of it, but he's basically
13 and 14. I think
he's done that role as either called a secretary, right? For Riverina Rugby. He was doing that as a volunteer in the late 90s, and he transitioned that into a paid role with the Brumbies in the early 2000s, and then carried that through for, I reckon, 10 or 15 years. Easy.
Yeah.
So if you add on his 5 or 10 that he was doing before that, like, you know, that's roughly 20 plus years, and he's still involved as a referee in that now.
Is one of his kids, Gerald?
Yeah.
He's playing quite well somewhere, isn't he?
Gerard's played his footy with Waratahs. From memory, Matt is the youngest of the sons. By all reports, he was a handier of
them. Maybe Jared's one. He was Waratahs and Aggies, I think he was.
Jared definitely came back and played his footy with Waratahs. Well, Ag College in the first instance, and then Waratahs.
So we've looked at your career as a player, and you're being your bonnet about Stu Nolan and his what he may or may not have done to some probably deserving Waratahs
No doubt.
Back in the early 2000s. You transitioned into a referee?
I did. Can we talk about the 2004 premiership before we move on to talking about referee?
No.
Yeah, bring that up.
That was a good year. Like, you guys gave it to us in that year. It was that was a busy year for Waratahs. Waratahs had won the 2001 premiership that before that.
Yeah.
And had tough outings with you guys against the likes of Mick Alexander and Belly and Weeks and those sort of guys. Although Weeks was in Sydney at that time, but
They I think after the 2000, they won in 2000, and Mick Alexander had already gone. So he won, he was a part of 1999.
Yep.
Then come 2000, Mick had left. And I think...
I reckon Weeks followed him.
Weeks followed him, because there was about four or five of them that went up to Sydney to Eastwood and teams like that.
I think Tim Alexander even went up there as well.
Well, Tim ended up going further afield. Yeah, right. Went over to Hong Kong, eventually.
Yeah.
Though I think they rate him as the better player.
Yep.
She absolutely...
Yeah, Fubs tells me he was the best one, but I think Tim was had a bit about him too.
But that 2004 final was a tough day out. Like, it was a big day out for us. You know, we'd only lost two games during the year, one of which was against you guys. I think we might have been Cootamundra or someone was one of the other games, but it was one of the northern clubs because they played the crossovers at that time. And in the Southern Conference, it was Albury and Waratahs. And then they played the crossover.
No, it was
a
crossover
series,
one,
So we had to beat other teams outside of the pool to end up in the grand final against each other. And Paul Massaro was coaching, I think, from memory.
2004, I think it was. Footy was 2004. And
Is that the year when... Because everyone's talked about this 2004 team.
That
is
was
the year.
They got that was the,
is from that the year that he freaked out and he changed the team around.
He made some late changes to the squad just before the grand final, I think.
Yeah.
We haven't had footy on yet.
He's
going away for a few weeks, but we hit him up when he gets back. But
yeah,
he'll have a different take on all of that.
My memory was two pretty similar teams.
I think from the Waratah Steamers perspective, it was one we expected to win. We thought
absolutely.
Yeah. So what's your take on it?
It was a tough game.
Yeah.
I don't remember a lot from the game other than just physicality. I do remember one part of the game, which was Ricky Dummigan's try, which is the try that drew the game or tied the scores at the end there. And I remember it being late in the game and Ricky, you know, scoots from scrum half at a ruck, probably 60 metres out. That might be an exaggeration now, but it was a fair trek to get to the... Yeah. To the
we'll interview line. You in 10 years and see if it's 80
metres out. It's probably 85. Him just taking that, like having that confidence to take the short side and back himself to get away. And Wes Grayson was playing at the time. And I remember chasing, and I'm not a fast player at all. I remember chasing, and Wes Grayson played Queensland schools, I think, from memory. Like, he was fit, right? Like, he was doing the army down here, I think, from memory.
Yeah.
And he pulled up as though his hamstring was done, and there was no bloody hamstring tear for that. He could have kept chasing Ricky. Ricky was burning him.
Yeah,
that's one of those memories of a player who. The recollection I have is that Wes went off after that. He may not have, but I remember that.
He's blown a hammy chasing.
Whether he did or didn't, I don't know. But that, and then you guys had attacking opportunity late in the game.
Yeah.
And there was a knock on, maybe Hoggy. I don't know, it's getting a bit tiny. Hoggy was off around there, but
Hoggy was 2000. Yeah, he would have been 2004, 2005 too.
There was
a
knock on around that could have, like, we defended pretty well in that game. That could have, you know, resolved in a trial for you guys. Yeah. And then it was basically just get the ball down the other end of the field and play position.
Field position.
And ended up with we ended up with two penalties late in that game. One, we took the kick to the corner in front of that sort of grandstand area down there, which is always a screamer, grand final day. It's an awesome setup. But we lost the line out. You guys beat us. I think it was Aaron Davis that stole the ball. And as a second row, I don't remember. Our two jumping options would have been me and Nob from memory.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the call was, but I remember us losing that line out. And then The next penalty we got was the one Matty Williams dung a kick from, you know, 40-odd metres out or whatever.
And put
it never looked like missing, put it into the hockey fields of,
yeah.
At Jubilee. Yeah. And that was it. That was the game.
We've just got some music now, so we're pumping out there. All right, so that's sad times for the club.
Sad times for the Steamers.
The Steamers, not so
awesome
much for you
times
guys.
For,
so for you guys have won quite a few premierships, the Waratahs. Like, it's sort of a, you know, if you're going to beat someone, you have to beat the Waratahs to win one.
Yeah,
really.
That's right. But, I mean, you know. Albury have been quite a successful footy club as well. You know, like, you've got those jerseys downstairs there. Like,
yeah,
there's...
Yeah.
There's more jerseys up down there than there are Waratahs, like in the, you know, on display. Like, it's obviously a, you know, quite a proud club to have that stuff up. But it was, again, like that grand final of 2004 was, were the two best teams in the comp.
Yeah.
And remember, this is around the time that Grenfell were coming off the back of their 9-season streak or whatever it had been up in the North competition. And we, and that was, we'd played Grenfell in the 2001 grand final and beat them in 2001. And then they played Griffith. I think they played Griffith played Grenfell in 2003. Was the Blacks? Because Griffith wore the black and white, so they got the, because they had a clash. The Griffith Blacks versus the Grenfell Blacks.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. They're both black.
They'd had a jersey clash.
Yeah,
they played 2003, and then we had to beat out both of those teams. Albury and Waratahs had to be two very handy teams in Griffith to get in the grand final.
When was that? Was that year? Was that around the time Griffith had those had that big influx of Fijians, or was that in the '90s? It might have been the '90s.
Nineties, yeah.
I remember
Penny,
they
Penny Belier and Penny Narara and those sort of boys run around then.
Yeah, they had a. I just can't quite remember when they had a big boost shot of players, and it went next level. Like, I think one year they were completely unbeatable.
That would have been, I reckon that was 2003. Guy Ledwidge was coaching them around that time, and they had a killer team. They were unbelievable.
Sort of a bit from nowhere, like that. Sort of gone along.
Would you say the Waratahs, like my time of being here watching them, they're probably the most consistent club out, because they never really sit outside the top four every year. Like, they might not sit at the top of the table. They're either going to sit fourth, second or third in the whole season. As, like, I think like when I first hear you, you're like, oh, beat Waratahs, but they're always in that fourth, no matter how, like, they're not as strong as what they've been in previous years, but they always seem to somehow always
remember,
still sit in fourth.
Warwick Grant once told me that it's a, they seem it as a failure if they don't make finals.
But they always seem to sit in the top four all the time. You never see them below five or six.
My memory of Waratahs, like, my dad was playing footy for Waratahs in late 70s and early 80s. My first recollection of rugby union was watching Waratahs play out at Forest Hill. Like, that was running the sand on for the, you know, for the tea and watching guys like
there
Dave
that,
Walker.
The Reddies played them out there and it was an all-in brawl. And one of the old man Megerson turned around to the referee and said, oh, you got to send him off. And send our prop off, even though it was an all-in brawl.
I was probably in primary school. But, like, that's my recollection of that. And, you know, talking to my dad and those sort of guys who, you know, played footy around there, there were some lean times, for them as a footy club back then. You know, like, it was, you know, there were no guarantees. Like, they were, you know, similar to the times that all footy clubs have had where guys are playing two or three grades and all that sort of stuff on the road. But, you know, I think through the 90s, through to now, they've been a very consistent footy club.
Yeah.
I don't know what the recipe is for that. I think they've been sort of blessed to have a few, families that have, hung around, like you mentioned, the Megasons and those sort of guys who've, had kids come through and that sort of stuff, and, fathers have played footy with sons and that sort of stuff is important. But, really consistent families involved with the footy club, like Warwick Grant, Judy Grant, like those sort of families that have been around for a long time. And that's even true with, like, Lockie Day. Like, his dad, Phil, has been involved with the club for a long time. He's a sponsor. And
that'll be off air.
take it off air. There's some stories in there. But, like, those families that have been around, as all footy clubs are built, on volunteers and those sort of things, I think Waratahs have, you know, been able to sort of, you know, keep a core nucleus of those, you know, families
involved in the club. For 10 years, they don't go no lower than fourth. You might beat them, and like teams might beat them, but they still manage to sit there at fourth. If they're not at fourth, they're either.
That's not a bad thing to have a team.
That's one of probably the most consistent clubs you've ever seen.
I'd put the Aggies not far behind that. You know, they consistently got the numbers, and it's they're pretty consistent. You know,
that's a funny point though too, right? Like people, like Reddies are going through a patch at the moment where their numbers aren't where they used to be, right? But when I first started playing footy, Gordon Rathshawgie was the starting New South Wales country second row playing footy out at CSU, and they were a red-hot team. They were a team to beat.
So that was all the 90s. I think they won 8 second-grade premierships or 7 second-grade premierships through the 90s.
Yeah.
They were on a huge, and then they won the one first-grade one as well.
Yep.
But their players they had were... Yep. Went phenomenal.
And every club goes through peaks and troughs, right? You know, maybe Waratahs have been more consistent than others, but like the Ag College that you see now, not that Ag College has ever been easy beats, but CSU would trounce them in the late 90s.
In the 90s,
2000s. And it's just the opposite now, you know? And that's a symptom more of what's happening on the uni and universities in general than Reddies as a footy club. Yeah. There's still plenty of, you know, good people behind Reddies that are, you know, trying to keep them moving forward. But, yeah, every club goes through it.
And COVID would be sort of doubly hurtful for clubs like the Reddies, you know, where uni stops altogether.
Yeah, exactly. But most COVID courses are off camp.
Again, I've got to say, COVID hurt a lot of sort of country clubs. But somehow the Waratahs, again, consistent, still sitting up the top, you know, like you look at them, you know. Like you said, pretty well blessed in how the clubs probably run.
So we've got... we've moved through your playing career. You got to offload on us about the 2004 grand final.
I wasn't doing this without doing that.
I reckon I will get a few phone calls.
My phone will be blowing up too.
We want to have a podcast. So when did you decide while you were playing to become a referee, or was it just sort of a natural progression? Or
when I was the development officer, I found that I was refereeing at gala days.
So you became the development officer in 2003.
Yep,
around 2003. Yep, around 2003. Is that like a paid position for Siru?
Yep, at the time it was part time, which was tough. I was, you know, working pubs and whatever else to back up that. But so that was. Paid for through, you know, the ARU's World Cup funds. Yeah. Ultimately, there was a heap of them across Australia that got into that. But I started there, you know, working for Brumbies/Siru in 2003 and was playing through that time as well. Got my coaching tickets, got my refereeing tickets while I'm doing the gala days and that sort of stuff. I started an apprenticeship in 2005. So
what is
Sparky? So I'm a Sparky by trade.
What is? Can you drop down the module now?
You don't want to drop down to that one, Sammy. You'll just keep driving and say, "Oh, I'll be back. I've got another quote around the corner."
So I couldn't afford to be injured. Kids and mortgage and all that sort of stuff. So I stopped playing. I did some coaching stuff through sort of 2007, 2008, and started refereeing in 2009. So I was still doing some sort of, like, as you get tied into doing stuff with clubs, there's always CTAs and that sort of stuff. You know, clubs to appoint for referees.
So you became a senior referee in 2009?
I was refereeing third grade in 2009, and
so we saw you in 2011, I reckon, and 12.
Yep,
you're pretty solid referee by then. So is your trajectory pretty fast, or
I think if you want to do it, it's like playing footy, right? If you're going to have a go at it, have a go at it. You know, that's always in my view, and I just was thirsty to, you know, for knowledge. So I was
And you wanted to stay part of the game?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's no different to coaching, right? Like, and, you know, as we said before, footy clubs don't survive without volunteers, and refereeing's no different. I mean, it's a key part of any element of, you know, of country footy and footy in general is that, you know, clubs need supporters. You know, who's running your canteen, right? You're not paying someone to run your canteen.
Yeah,
like, you've got to network and get the people on board. So I know that's an element of the game. I've always been a community-minded sort of person and wanted to, you know, give back to that.
It's obviously a different skill set. And I'm just thinking of a guy that used to play for the Reddies called Jared O'Connor, who's one of the better players I've seen. He won the 3 best and fairest. He was in the Riverina squads, all that sort of stuff. And he switched into refereeing after he finished.
Yep.
And he didn't last. And I remember talking to him about it, and he said, it's so hard to... You could see the play, you could see the problem, then blow your whistle and talk and point your hands all in the space of a couple of seconds. He said it was just...
Yeah, there's a lot happening.
It was a thing that, as players, we take for granted when a referee's got an arm up, pointing and talking and moving on to the next play.
Yeah. Look, maybe having played and been part of that sort of Brumbies, you know, development officer pathway helped as well. But I think if you've got a feel for the game, you've got a feel for the game. Do you know, I think I always understood what the players were trying to achieve. And, you know, maybe as a referee who had played, you have a bit of a better understanding for when the guys are foxing and, like, you know, hey, like, that's not what's going on.
Like Richie McCaw, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Cheat all day.
But good on him. Like, he's been able to,
he's a hoodwinked.
Get away with it. Like, he's a hoodwinked you've got to support that, and, you know, he's an amazing footballer.
So I think for Jared, the difference would have been he wouldn't have had the opportunity to referee juniors games. So he's going straight from playing into senior refereeing, and that...
My first gala day
stuff.
Yeah, which was all about, you're almost coaching in that. Like, you're almost, you know, and you're trying to fabricate a game. But my first grade debut was actually against Albury versus Cootamundra.
As a referee?
As a referee, yep.
In 2009 or something?
No. I think it would have been 2011 maybe.
I think
Bridie was captain.
Yeah.
Lulbeck would have been captain in 2011.
You're probably right, actually. It was in Cootamundra, back when, when the ground ran east-west.
It was cold, windy. It was
big slop, mud
patch. Pick all the elements. Hit at them all.
So you could choose to run away from the mud and have the sun at your back, or you could choose to run into the mud looking into the sun.
So when Brian's listening to us, he really wants to know, did you lead your trade off phone, Dino?
Look, there's a point we'll talk about there, no doubt. Around that time, as an up-and-coming referee, there were a lot of handy referees around with, you know, Dino and Delge, Angus Duncombe, Craig... far out, I'm forgetting his surname now, but he had a guy down here.
Craig Jackson.
Like, a lot of handy guys running around that time that were, you know, quite supportive. There was a really good crew of referees out towards Leeton with Tony Renneker, Jeff Ticehurst, Greg Duggan and those guys out that way who were, like, there was a lot of guys around who had the same sort of goals at the time who were about, you know, supporting, you know, community footy and, you know, and just wanted to everyone to be as good as they could be. But I enjoyed my time refereeing. I did 10 years as a referee and finished up in 2019 and just, you know, it was time. I felt
that...
2019. Okay. It was the last year that I refereed and just had, I think, 10 years. Like, there's got to be other people out in the area, you know, over that time who can put their hand up. Do you know what I mean? If you're in a coach at a footy club for 10 years, there's got to be other people involved
who can put
their hand up. And, you know, the reality is that all sports need, you know, volunteers. Yeah. You know.
Did you feel like there wasn't enough volunteers or referees coming through or making that big
referees step? Are volunteer or you get paid?
You get paid mileage, but it's not making money. You're not doing it for the money. You're not, exactly. You know, like, you're not... No one's making a dollar out of refereeing.
Didn't we Hasn't there been a push from time to time to fund paying referees for the clubs to...
Yeah, as I understand it, that's happening now. I remember being part of chats with the ACT referees around those, that sort of 2012-13 type period where ACT brought that stuff in. It's a double-edged sword in some ways, but, in that it's a fee for service.
And the AFL's hard because it's such a long game.
But if you're going to attract good referees, if money is going to be a barrier, like, take it out of the way, do you mean? Like, and pay them.
I think we should. I mean, it's the same thing we talked about players in that, for Albury's perspective, is we're competing with a playing level. We're competing with three Adams AFL Murray, competitions.
Yeah, and bush footy, bush AFL three, team in the comp.
There's three AFL competitions in Albury. Yeah. So, and all those players get paid something.
Yeah.
And then kids refereeing Auskick or,
$20 a game or whatever.
$20 a game. Yeah. And so we need to be able to match that. And some, not... We can't match the amounts, but we need to match the sentiment, I think.
Yeah.
You know.
It's a tougher discussion around how you reward. Do you reward first grade or do you reward the individual referee qualification? Do you reward travel? Like, there's a lot of different elements that go into that.
It's solvable, though.
Solvable. Yeah, it's just that the love of the game's gone, isn't it?
We're
talking about payment for the love of the game. Yeah. We all used to play for the love of the game. Well, it's for the love of the game.
Rent is high, you know. A beer is $10. Like, you know, like you're paying a referee.
Depends whether you got a members card or not. Harvest looking after them.
Do you have a Harvest card?
I don't have a Harvest card actually. Oh. I should, but the Harvest pubs in Wagga, the Vic, and
William Farrer. Well, yeah. They've just ramped down their reward system from 4-1 to 1-1.
Yeah, right.
But it happens on the 11th of April, so we just used all our cards on the weekend. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Perfect.
That was a little bonus. I'm going to ask a question on behalf of Tumut. Now, feel free just to say I'm not going there.
Yeah, right.
But I remember, I can't remember the president at the time. Nice guy, but he had a bee in his bonnet about you refereeing Tumut games, and they reckon they hadn't won a game in 10 years or 9 years. And I said, like, it didn't.
Wasn't there a view up there too that I was Dino's son?
Yeah.
They
could have won under Sam Dillon.
Down here it's love child, but anyway. Yeah, and I just thought it's just the way the penny falls, you know, like the way that the thing falls. But you don't hate Tumut, do you?
I hate them all, mate.
Hate them all equally.
Not at all. Well, no, that's another referee yarn, right? Like, he fucking hates us, the referee goes, I hate you all. Like, you know. But I don't know, you just got to play what's in front of you, right?
What's in front of you.
If you're, like, and as a club, if you're paying attention to that sort of stuff, like, that's where conspiracy theories come from, isn't
it's
it?
Just kind of, yeah.
But you forget about about playing the game and you're worried about watch.
Was exactly. Sam refereeing that game we played against the Reddies in that first game in 2014? When
when Cole Hogan picked up Mick Wakeling,
we lost the plot down here. Or was that Dino?
Wondering Dowd actually.
We went at the ref and Bridie in particular as part of it as well. So, and we sat down after the game and had a long talk about it.
I've always had good experiences refereeing Albury. They've always in the time that I've refereed Albury, we're always one to look after.
So who were the captains you're refereeing?
Nathan Bright, Jim Lolver were two that I remember. But through that,
Mannion.
Richie was he always captain, but he definitely had a bit to say. And I always enjoyed those players who were going to question you about decisions and do it in a way that was backed up in some fact. You know, that they had a take on a situation and they wanted to ask about it. That sort of chat is always something that you've. As a referee, I feel you have to respond to that.
Yeah,
you've got
But he didn't come at you like going, same thing. He just waited for his time.
Passionate footy player, no doubt. And
And they would hold you accountable. You accountable. So yeah, he left.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
He left the ground. He was off his feet. He did this. He did that. And you can say, well, I didn't see it that way. And but when they go, oh, you're a fucking cheat. Listen,
as a coach, if you're not asking those players to ask those questions of your referee, you're not doing the right thing as a coach. And as a referee, if you can't, transparently say why you made a decision, you're not doing the right thing as a referee.
So, and but speaking of coaches, here,
because exactly probably Ryan 2.0 wasn't playing when Sam was refereeing, because Ryan, who played last year and the year before, and carried on, you know, he was the same thing. He always asked a question. We played Waratahs last year. The night game up in Wagga last year, and he questioned, he was a new referee. It was the first time I'd seen him. And he questioned him, I wondered him, and the referee was like, no. He goes, no, yeah, it is. And I'm going on about something. And it wasn't until like 2 weeks later, the referee goes, oh, where's the guy that was questioning me on the Sansa? And then he goes, oh, he's over there. He goes, he's absolutely right. He was right. He goes, you know, so.
Yeah, and it's, referees aren't going to always get it right.
Nah.
The key is, though, that in those moments, if you think you've fucked it up, you've either got to own it and.
Or deal with it later.
Or deal with it afterwards.
You've got to move through the next 2 minutes, like, you know, you can't.
It's, you know, I've never seen a referee, change their mind on the field. No. Other than that one for, was it Angus Gardner?
Oh, yeah. TJ Perenara.
TJ called him up on kick out. And I mean, he hadn't made a decision at that point. But, I've seen some doozies, though, from referees over the years. It was funny when Tom Rowan was talking about that game the other week where he was saying that the referee, I reckon that was in 2005, 2006, somewhere around there. And I reckon I remember that game at Leighton where the referee, he's put his arm out to,
It was a juniors game,
game. And then it's turned around,
Sam's just impersonated a weather vane. Switched 180
degrees.
It's
one of the funniest things I've ever seen. I wasn't a referee
Speaking of funny things, you were chatting earlier about you refereeing us in an Aggies game. This is early 2015.
Yeah.
How did that pan out?
I reckon it was a cricket score. And there was quite a passionate coach on the other side of it.
So Nick McCarthy?
From memory, it was Albury Ag was the game down here. It was 105-0 was the score.
Yeah, and the Aggies at the time had five Brumbies provincial players in that.
The whole forward pack was in the.
Yeah, it was a sublime performance from you guys. It was, touch footy.
And what did you have to do to the? Have you ever had to do that again before or since?
No, I had to ask him to go and have a beer at the canteen or whatever. Yeah, never had to do it before.
Well, he's been vindicated since.
No, look, I've got a lot of time for Nick. He's a good guy.
He's had premierships and he's stuck with the game.
He's had a bit of time with Queanbeyan as well.
Did he?
Yeah, second grade of Colts from memory over there. He's a guy who's passionate about the game.
Yeah.
He saw things differently on the game. I didn't know what more I could have done in that game.
It would have been pretty frustrating.
Yeah.
It was kick off, easy, pass, try.
And the easy out is point your finger at the ref. But I don't know, it didn't matter. It didn't seem
a couple of points here or there,
but even if it is a couple of points here or there,
the referee.
Do you want the referee to decide the game?
There was another club that pointed a finger at the referee too. And they got upset because they missed out on the final.
Were they
playing the final on the referee?
Who was that?
Your mate ended up coaching another team.
Oh, Wagga City. Did they put something in the paper?
I didn't. It wasn't me referee. Are you talking about a City grand final?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
Facebook post.
That was at their Mad Monday or something, and they were drinking at the Vic, and they had the game on the big screen. And old mate posted something on the socials about something that, from the angle, looked like the referee. Like, it looked like this incident happened directly in front of the referee, but when you look at it, the referee's looking directly into the sun, and when you
it was taken down
pretty quickly, and
a lot of that stuff's a storm in a teacup,
like it's guys on the beers not thinking straight.
Do you ever come across a Twitter feed that you were a target of a Twitter feed?
I was never a target of it. I reckon I might have bought into the
kebabs spirit of it.
You know,
there
was money flying around for that, wasn't there?
I should have paid money to get it stopped. I still get into trouble to this day. I'm still getting into trouble from that Twitter feed.
It was nothing to do with me.
No,
it's one of the best yarns going around for.
I think it was
like,
really
whoever
good
was
fun.
Behind it like, has done well.
Yeah. It was an old ready.
I've heard the story.
It was
funny.
Yeah, I'd get phone calls. You know. After the game, saying, "Oh, geez, your tweet's a bit rude." I go, "What?" I'm looking at, "Oh, God's sake!" You know, we did have to pull one down. It was we played Cootamundra, and I got a phone, and we put a score on them. And the tweet was brutal about Cooter. And Justin Clancy rang me and said, "Mick, can you?" And I rang the ready and said, "Look, can you deal with that one?" And he just deleted it straight away. But I'm still getting into a lot of trouble over a lot of those tweets.
Social media's got its place. Like you can do a bit of impersonating when you want to. But like that was like green and gold rugby, right? Like I got that sort of stuff through my uncle who was involved with that. And Green and Gold Rugby were looking to, not that there was ever any money or anything in it, but they were looking for people within the community to be involved. And, you know, from my perspective as a referee, we're involved with all the games, right? So we would try and, you know, everything I've ever posted on Green and Gold Rugby has always been a positive to promote footy in the area, right? Like, and been lucky enough to be able to write up. So we got on their front page and, you know.
So you do match reports on grand finals and match reviews
and stuff like that? I haven't got the time or I'm not as involved in the games as I used to be. When I was, it was about engaging with the coaches and trying to see who the players within their club that were doing well. Mm. And, you know, there were, you know, families from, you know, like Hamish Rafter, who was playing his footy at Wagga City at the time, his old man would post on Green and Gold Rugby because it was actually getting the results quicker and getting write-ups on the game from people watching his young fella play footy. Those sort of guys were...
Yeah, I think I found it. Always found it valuable. I found it good fun. Like it was.
Yeah, exactly. It's always a way of poking a bit of fun at players. Yeah. You know, getting involved in a bit of, you know, the hijinks that are
poking a bit of fun at Bubba.
Yeah, exactly. But again, good club fella. Like, you know, has been rolling around Riverina, you know, Southern Inland Rugby forever. And
rolling around. Are you pointing out his size of him?
Sorry, Bubba. You are rolling
words
around
in my mouth. Yeah.
We've only got a few minutes here left, Sammy. Before we run out of time here,
let's do the three, two, one.
Yeah. You got a couple of girls playing footy now, is that correct?
I coach for the Southern Sports Academy.
Yeah.
And there's some girls around from this area actually who are doing pretty well through the juniors. So we've got kids from all over the Riverina in our academy. But there's two girls from down this way who are worth keeping your eye on, and that's Edwina Harrington and Charlotte Packer. They're two
young girls who are
coming through. Yeah. So I know you guys have been speaking a lot about the sort of that Colts and the importance of the connection from junior to senior club. And you know, it's good to see those sort of, particularly like those family names, still being involved.
Well,
I remember we
asked Tom Harrington who the best player in the family was, and I think Letitia
now, she made a debut for the girls.
Oh, really?
Team up in group.
So we've got there's a cast of thousands coming out of the Harringtons.
We might have a family feud. 100%.
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to give you two different shots at your 3-2-1s.
Yep.
So we want your 3-2-1s for your playing time for the Steamers.
Yep. It's always tough footy against the Steamers, and from my experience, the backs particularly, there wasn't ever much between the forwards with the Waratahs and Albury, but guys like I would put 1 point down for Mick Alexander.
Yep.
Just a quality footballer, you know, all round. He's been involved for a very long time and quite successful outside the zone as well. I would put Wheats down for 2 points. You know, very similar to Mick Alexander, but Belly, 3 points.
Belly, yeah. Like,
tough, you know, made of concrete, could play in the centres or the breakaway and, you know, never let anyone past him.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, his nails fair, like, yeah.
We've heard his name a lot.
Yeah.
Any honourable mentions outside of that? Anyone in the forwards?
Aaron Davis was a guy who was always a handy
I think he picked up three best and fairest here.
There's a fellow, was it Mark Hoy? Did I get that right? Mark
Hoy.
Anyway, there was a lot of guys around that. Like Nick Davison came through the seamers around that time as well. But it was hard to split those.
That's all right. We got your 3-2-1. Now, what about as a referee? And you'll have a different...
you're Bill Castle medals.
You vote on the Bill Castle medals. Yeah, so you must...
Referee, we've been part of...
So we've the Steamers have had a few Bill Castle medals come up over the years.
Unique of which has got to be Doolan.
Bombed in
from...
What year was that? 2003 or something?
2003 or 4, somewhere around there. No, it wouldn't have been 2004, but maybe 2005.
He's an AFL guy.
Came over for one season, bagged the Bill Castle on that.
I think we've had, see you later. And Bridie won it, and Liam Crouch has won it.
Yeah.
Bridie shared it.
Did he share it?
Yeah.
Did Mannion win it 1 year?
Maybe.
Don't know.
It's tough in that team when you've got a successful team.
They cannibalise each other for the points. Well, that's it. Liam won it for the Reddies off 8 games, I think, 1 year.
Yeah, because stand-up player.
There's not many people getting points there. So,
exactly.
All right, so what's your, as a referee, your 3-2-1?
3-2-1s as a referee, that's even that's a tough gig, right?
So this is from, say, 2010 or 11 up till 2019.
Most of my involvement was with the captains in that time. And, you know, so that's Brighty and those sort of guys. But you remember, again, like fellas like Wheats and Richie Mannion and those sort of guys are rolling around, always, you know, high-quality footballers. Yeah. James Olds, like, good score points, you know, good defender.
So we're going to pin you down for 3-2-1s?
If I've got to go...
1 point.
If I would give... probably from a refereeing perspective, I would give 1 point to, let's say, Jim Lowellback.
Oh, of course.
Things are going to feature strongly here. They're going to feature strongly.
No, that's fair call. There's no rules here.
Jim Lowellback.
What do you remember about Jim?
Just a nice fella, like a good quality footballer. He was, you know, never going to let you down.
Stall, could play. Guinea streak of weasel's piss.
Yeah, reasonably quick. Could sort of play, you know, around, you know, different positions as well. From a refereeing perspective, Jim Lowellback, then let's tie that into, I'll give Richie Mannion a mention in that.
Yeah.
And then 3 points has got to be Nathan Bright.
Yeah, and Bright is he's a funny one because he might not have been the best actual player, but everything else about him.
Didn't he transition from the wing into
He moved into number 8.
Yeah.
But it's everything else that he brings.
Hmm.
He's the Mike Brilley of...
absolutely. He's a politician.
He's a politician.
He should follow in...
follow Justin Clancy.
Yeah, Clancy's footsteps.
It might be on his horizon.
No, but he's just a really calm person. You know, knows how to deal with people. Sort of person is gold from a coach's perspective and a referee's perspective.
Yeah. All right, we've got a minute to go.
Thank you for your time, Sam.
My pleasure.
Thank you for making the journey down here, especially for this podcast. Sam was in Finlay working and he's just on his way home, called in. But thank you for your time and giving us your knowledge of playing against the Steamers and where the Waratahs were as they're coming through the club.
No, it's a good perspective to have it from the outside. We don't want to be too introspective all the time. That's good.
Mate, I've enjoyed listening to the podcast, and thanks for having us on.
Appreciate it. Good. Thank you.
All the best.
We'd just like to thank Sophie's voice, because that's all you can hear in the background. You know, I think she's probably talking to herself, but she's not. Cool. All right.
No worries. Thank you.